Welcome back to Theia. I'm Joe Consorti here with Peter Dunworth from the Bitcoin Advisor and Smeet Bhatt, co-founder of Theia. We have a very exciting announcement to make, and I'll throw that to Peter.
Well, we're here today to talk about a partnership arrangement between the Bitcoin Advisor and Theia, which I've got to say I'm so excited about because having worked behind the scenes with Smeet for what feels like a number of years now and his team, I'm so excited to announce that Bitcoin Advisor has gone through all of our due diligence and is now using Theia as one of our multi-sig solutions. And from a user experience perspective, I can't stress how exquisite this user experience is. And for this, in the Bitcoin Advisor's overarching goal of trying to get every Bitcoin off exchange, I look at what Theia offers and feel like that is just an outstanding user experience to help in that goal. So, Smeet, congratulations on building an outstanding user experience, and we're thrilled at the Bitcoin Advisor to start using it.
No, so super glad to onboard Bitcoin Advisors as an official sort of partner to Theia. A lot of our customers are asking for questions around collaborative custody and advisory services around Bitcoin holdings, and we couldn't think of a better partner than TBA. So really excited to work with, you know, you, Peter, Andy, and rest of the TBA team.
Yeah, it's funny. There are so many misconceptions, I think, about and so many scary stories about multi-sig, and I'm concerned about it, or, you know, people think that they've got to be experts to use it. And what I think is so exquisite about Theia and, you know, this collaborative security model that we've got is it is the easiest user experience I've seen in Bitcoin. And what's really interesting, and this sounds completely counterintuitive, and to tell you the truth, it sounds like hogwash, but I firmly believe that setting up a Theia multi-sig with collaborative security that we do is easier than setting up a single sig hardware wallet. And most importantly, there are a whole host of redundancies built into that model as opposed to a single sig model that give you a whole host of fail-safe protections in the event that you completely muck things up. So for me, I actually think sig is the future of self-custody, and that collaborative security protocol is an absolute must, particularly for people starting out. And a common misconception I think people miss is that they think, I need to start on a single sig wallet before I can understand a multi-sig wallet. And I actually think it's far safer starting out on a multi-sig than it is starting out on a single sig. And it's just counterintuitive. It's a much better solution to start with.
I'd say that if someone has made the decision of taking Bitcoin off exchanges and moving into a single sig wallet, you might as well just go directly to multi-sig. Why take half the step when you can take the full step and go full sovereign with no points of failure, complete sovereignty and unilateral access to your Bitcoin?
The other thing that I've had the experience now of going through with a couple of clients, the onboarding experience with Theia, and I can say it is seamless. It is so easy. And the reason why I can say with confidence that this multi-sig solution is easier than a single sig is that from start to finish of a client wanting to self-custody their Bitcoin to having their Bitcoin in the vault is really less than a 5 to 10 minute period. Now, some on our team can get this process done in under 2 minutes. Sadly, I'm probably the least technically proficient in our team, so it might take me 6 or 7 minutes. But to have someone's coins in a vault, multi-sig vault that has no single point of failure in less than 10 minutes is an outstanding user experience. It just speeds up the process. It delivers peace of mind. And the number one thing that we want to see is Bitcoins off exchange. And if you tell me we can deliver that in a 10 to 15 minute window, I mean, that is outstanding. It's a step function change in being able to secure your Bitcoin. And this is where the user experience that you deliver with Theia is really quite something. And the fact that, you know, you don't need a hardware wallet in order to create that multi-sig functionality, and they can create a soft key on the phone now, and that can be literally done in less than a minute, that completely redefines this, you know, multi-sig proposition, I think, and getting coins off exchange is a big deal. And all of a sudden, clients can now get coins off exchange whether they have a hardware wallet or not. Now, on a personal note, and this is probably showing my age and maybe my tortured experience with Bitcoin, that I personally still recommend clients have a hardware wallet as a backup. But ironically, I think the software wallet key in this protocol is just as secure, if not more secure, than the hardware device itself. And this is something that's mind-bending for me.
Absolutely, because with the software key, I mean, with the hardware key option, storing it on the secure enclave for your iPhone, it really is revolutionary. The way I've explained it, and I'm sure the way that you've explained it too, is that you get the security that's offered to you by a hardware wallet solution, but in the simplicity of your iPhone, and then pair that with the iCloud backup. That's an option when you generate your mobile key, if you decide to do that setup. Now, not only do you have that security that's offered by kind of a hardware device because it's stored in your iPhone secure enclave, but also if you lose your iPhone in a boating accident per se, you can get a new iPhone back, download your iCloud account, download the Thea app from that same iCloud account, back that key right up, and you're back in business. And so you get that security, but you also have that fail-safe. And for me, that's also a revolutionary component to it.
There is so much tech to digest that's, I think, new in the multi-sig space that it will take, I think, the market time to process and digest that we can actually have that security with that functionality. It's, I think, a real mind melt for people to comprehend. And a lot of people think that that is mutually, the security is mutually exclusive to a great user experience. But from the work we've done, and it's not me, it's really the team, has spent an enormous amount of time with your team, Smeet, in making sure that everything's ticked off and there's no compromises when it comes to the security of Bitcoin. Because as great a user experience as it is, without the assurances that we've checked every box from a security perspective, we wouldn't be having this conversation. So that's kind of a prereq that we've got to talk about, that if the security isn't up to scratch, we're not having this conversation and user experience doesn't even come into it. But the security is up to scratch. It does everything that we need it to and more. And then the user experience on top of that is the only word I've got to describe it is exquisite, because, you know, me personally, I would have set up hundreds of different multi-sig vaults. And depending on your level of competency, it can be a relatively smooth process or it can be quite a tough process to get through. And this all of a sudden makes this technology and self-custody option far more accessible to anyone with a phone. So to me, this is a great step function change and improvement in user experience and multi-sig tech.
I mean, it's a surprise, right? I mean, Bitcoin has been around for about 10 years, 15 years. Multi-sig has been around for more than 10 years. And there is this sort of idea, which is like very fundamental in the Bitcoin industry, where security is always comes a trade-off of user experience. And we fundamentally disagree with that. We think that you can deliver like excellent security without really compromising on you know, user experience. It's just that nobody has really tried hard enough for that. And that's really where we excel, where we obviously never compromise on security. Like the whole company was built with the idea of providing sovereignty and self-custody solutions to Bitcoiners of all backgrounds, all demographics, all technical sort of know-how to make sure that, you know, the Bitcoin always stays under their control. But that needs to come with a excellent sort of premium high-end user experience. Otherwise, you know, there is no like mass adoption of Bitcoin self-custody. And we were very glad to sort of market appreciate that. And especially someone, you know, this coming out from, you know, someone like you, Peter, we really sort of, you know, feel encouraged through this development.
It's been a great process. And like we've been talking for well over a year now, probably closer to 18 months. And it's been very humbling to be part of the development of this product. And the user experience, when I immediately used it, I was like, oh my goodness, this could completely redefine self-custody. And for me, the assurity that we give clients is that there's no single point of failure. And then to see this morph into what it is and how many steps have been removed in the creation of a vault that has collaborative security has just been, it's been such a joy to see this process work out, because our ultimate goal is to get coins off exchange and deliver that in the best process possible. And this is where so many steps in the process have been removed with what you've developed. And it really is quite interesting. If anyone I talk to about multi-sig, I'm like, you should try this product. Like it is, or this service. It is unbelievable from a usability perspective, and it doesn't require any technical knowledge. You don't need to understand hardware wallets. You don't need to understand seed words. All of the major unique points that come with self-custody, I think, have been simplified. And because we've been able to create a security model for your Bitcoin with a collaborative arrangement, it removes a lot of the technical requirements that you need to have in order to run a private key, hardware wallet, things like that. So this is where the work your team's done on this is really very impressive. And for anyone who's watching this, I'd strongly urge you to download it and try it, because it is a very, very easy product to.
Absolutely. And so, Peter, one thing I'll ask you is, you know, how receptive have your customers been to the Theia setup process? I mean, we know that you, based on your words, you seem to really love it over at TBA and setting people up and taking them through it. What has it been like for, what has the feedback been like from your clients? Obviously, the old way you kind of did things, right? And still with other multi-sig arrangements, other options that you provide, they are a little bit more complex. They are more time consuming. I know that the Theia setup saves you a great deal of time. What has the user feedback been like, you know, with this setup process compared to the other multi-sig setup processes that you've taken people through in the past?
Quite simply, probably it could be best summarized into three words. That was easy. It's that simple. That was easy. Everyone we've taken through this process, that's it. It's like, yes, now you're Bitcoin secure and everything's sorted. So I think there's a shock, and this is where, to my point earlier about a lot of people misconstrue the fact that I believe this multi-sig is easier than a single sig. And when we take clients through it, they look at that and go, oh, that was so easy. And depending on what level of experience they've got across the Bitcoin space, some people are really deep down the rabbit hole and they've got multiple cold cards, they've got multiple devices, seed plates, you name it, split across, you know, geographically distributed. And then they use this product and within 5 to 10 minutes, they can get all of those things that they've spent years creating downloaded on their phone and coins moved in that delivers just as much security, if not better security trade-offs than what they currently have in less than 10 minutes. And that is a mind-blowing experience, particularly for some of the Bitcoiners who have spent a lot of time in the space, who have got very well-defined protocols for themselves. But to go a little bit deeper on that, what we find sort of a key points in a Bitcoiner's life where they call us to talk about this or want help with multi-sig is typically around two things. Firstly, the point at which they're managing an amount of Bitcoin that they're not comfortable looking after themselves. Now, that sounds completely blasphemous and antithetical to the whole Bitcoin ethos, but there comes a point in a time where people don't want to manage or be responsible for all of their wealth. You know, if you're worth $100 million, you don't really want to be walking around with $100 million worth of liability. To me, that's bad risk mitigation to do that. The second point is in a Bitcoiner's life when, and Joe, this is probably what we were discussing before we went on, a point in time in your life where you're about to get that to that point very quickly where, you know, wife and kids come along and all of a sudden it's not just you who is relying on this Bitcoin. You're providing a life and a lifestyle for your family, for your wife, for your children, and there's an expectation that you'll be able to continue to provide that even if you're not here. Now, if you're managing that process all yourself and you've got your own protocols, it's incumbent upon you to ensure that you can pass that on and your wife or your partner has the ability to recover that Bitcoin and maintain that level of continuity for the family that is relying on that Bitcoin. And this is where a lot of people just don't want to pass that responsibility to their wife, or their wife doesn't want that responsibility, or the other partner doesn't want the responsibility. And this is where they look at say what we do and say, right, can you prove to me that there's no single point of failure? Can you prove to me that if I'm not here, my wife can recover my Bitcoin? And when we actually take clients through that process and show them, hey, you've got full control of your Bitcoin, you can do whatever you want with it. And if you're not here, you know, you fall asleep and you don't wake up tomorrow, your wife has got a friendly face at the end of the, you know, end of a video call like this, and we can recover your Bitcoin and move it to wherever we need to. And that level of peace of mind, particularly for Bitcoiners who have spent and sacrificed so much to get to a point that, you know, if they're relying on their Bitcoin wealth for their future family's needs, they're clearly very early to Bitcoin and they've made a huge amount of sacrifice, and to have that peace of mind that goes with it represents a big deal.
Absolutely, it's invaluable. And, you know, I do find myself in a position now where that's extremely important. It's extremely important. Usability. I mean, people who have been in Bitcoin for a while, they've had experience setting up hardware wallets, something like a single sig arrangement on their own. That used to be a viable thing. But now the Bitcoin is becoming this multi-generational asset that we all know it is and it can be, and it's monetizing in that direction. Inheritance planning is something a lot of people are thinking about. And, you know, going to somebody like the Bitcoin Advisor, who is now equipped with the Theia service in order to set up a multi-sig vault for inheritance purposes. I mean, honest and truly, it never has been easier. Kind of to that point, I want to shift gears here gradually to, you know, kind of the Bitcoin market more generally, you know, in the theme of it being a multi-generational asset, that it's an idea whose time has come, right? Things like 1 million, you know, $100,000 Bitcoin, honest to goodness, they're right around the corner. We see what the government is spending. You know, we see the direction of this cycle, right? It's kind of undeniable. We've been chopping around for months now. You know, on a more macro time horizon, you know, I've heard you throw out price targets like, you know, 1 million Bitcoin, $1 million Bitcoin, you know, over the next several years, decade plus. Where's your head at with the Bitcoin market as it stands now? You know, how are you kind of positioning yourself? How are you explaining Bitcoin to people, where it stands in the world now?
I think we're on the precipice of mass adoption. And this is where, if we were talking 6 months earlier, we didn't have, or maybe call it 9 months earlier, just less than a year ago, we didn't have an ETF approved. We didn't have the world's largest fund manager and every other fund manager or asset manager with an ETF product. To me, that represents a huge shift in psyche for investors. And this is where it's going to play out and take, I think, the next 2 to 5 years before people really embrace, or investors really embrace, Bitcoin to be led by the ETF. And I don't think the ETF is necessarily a bad thing. I think it's just going to create another layer to the top of the funnel that's going to get more and more people into this Bitcoin rabbit hole. I look at it's now socially, it's becoming socially acceptable that we will see Bitcoin as a socially acceptable investment to talk about amongst our peers. Whereas, you know, up until, well, for the last 15 years, it's kind of been the domain of cypherpunks and gadgets and tinkerers and Bitcoiners who are playing in the space, but, you know, there was never mass appeal. And I can tell you from an investing perspective, particularly in Australia and to a lesser degree in the US and the UK, but there is an obsession with property and home prices in Australia. And that's the dinner table talk. Hey, did you see this property went for that? They got this, this did that. And everyone's talking about property. And what I find really quite interesting to think about is, what is that investment conversation or that investing conversation going to look like in the next 5 or 10 years? And we've been having these conversations for the last, call it, 8 years with clients. All of our clients are sort of ahead of the curve on that. But I can tell you socially in their circles outside of, you know, talking to us, the talk of Bitcoin is really sort of frowned upon and, oh, that's speculative, I don't want to talk about it. And I look at this and think, all of a sudden, a lot of the Bitcoiners are going to be thrust to the center of the conversation around dinner parties and what have you, because of all the work that everyone's done in trying to understand this beast. And everyone loves Bitcoin when it's ripping and everyone wants to know you. And then when it falls off a cliff, which it invariably will, you know, it'll back to, you know, oh, that thing's dead and buried. And then all of a sudden it'll make a rise back and all of a sudden everyone will want it again. So I think we're standing at the precipice of something that will be a complete game changer from a societal perspective.
Peter,
I couldn't agree more, honestly. And, you know, the launch of the ETFs really was kind of this landmark moment. That Bitcoin was money for criminals a decade ago. It was money launderers' money. You know, people were getting arrested for building websites that just allowed people to transact in Bitcoin. You know, and now we're at the stage where a lot of the other stuff, the crypto, has been totally wiped out. You know, for the most part, there's still some lingerers. You still see the SEC actively going after here. Really, what do you think is standing in the way of Bitcoin from being what it is now to being, you know, this a decade from now, 2 decades from now, this asset that's $1 million, $2 million, $5 million even, going from a really bullish perspective, what are some of the other obstacles you think are in our way for Bitcoin to truly monetize to where it could be?
The biggest part I see, the biggest problem is education. And I think education, the problem around education is probably broken down into two parts. The first is a lack of ability, or lack of desire to get yourself educated on it. And the Western world probably falls into that camp. I would have thought that there is no need for the Western world or most Westerners to really dive into this because it's not really solving a problem for them. There's a relative stable currency. You know, life is relatively good. You don't have hyperinflationary events. Property rights are pretty stable. But for, you know, 6 billion people on Earth who don't have the luxuries that we have in the West, there is a need for it. So there's going to be a certain level of desire or urgency to get into that space. The other thing is we haven't had, I guess, a mainstream sales department for Bitcoin. And this is what the ETFs bring. It's Wall Street, the most sophisticated, you know, salesmen on earth are going to be talking to their clients, and their clients are going to be having dinner parties, talking to their friends and family about how did you know X, Y, and Z about Bitcoin? And it's like the frustrating and amusing thing for most Bitcoiners is it's like, ah, shit, we were talking about that 6 years ago. Like that's 6 years ago. That's the point, you know, we were making. And it doesn't matter where they hear it. It's just a matter that they hear it. And then I think a lot of Bitcoiners are just going to be very gracious that their friends and family are now actually interested in Bitcoin and now learning about and buying it. And this is where the education piece is critical because the education piece is going to then drive the purchase of it, and the purchase or the ownership of it is going to give you the skin in the game and the incentive to then dive deeper and learn more about it. So for me, having, you know, the world's greatest sales machine now focused on selling this is going to drive that education. It's going to drive that skin in the game, and then you know, the next 5 to 10 years is going to look very different.
That's an excellent point about education. And then when you think about it as well, as people buy these ETFs, they're going to want to know, you know, Wall Street people who are putting, maxing out their 401ks, for example, you have a salesman from BlackRock or Fidelity going to people, about these new products. They want to know what the underlying asset is. They don't just want to know that it provides outsized risk-adjusted returns. They want to know more about Bitcoin. And I imagine that a lot of these ETF holders are going to transition from people who are holding the ETF for its price performance into people who, you know, begin to see its price performance in their portfolio and go, gee, I really wonder even more about what this is. And then they'll get interested in using it the way it was supposed to be used and holding actual spot Bitcoin. And to your point about education being a huge driver of mass adoption, I have a feeling that a lot of these ETF investors, when they see the magic it does in their portfolio, and as they learn about what it is, so they're comfortable investing in it, they want to actually own the thing itself. Would you agree about that?
Yes, and this is where, to me, I'm trying to be constructive and cheerful about the advent of Wall Street turning up to sell ETFs. I think that's going to create a market in its own right, but the education that it's going to bring and that just the depth and breadth of distribution to new faces, it's also going to bring a level of authenticity and, I guess, confirmation that Bitcoin is now an investable asset class. Once that is done, then our job is a whole lot easier. And as an investor, people will dig down into that and want to own the underlying. When they understand that the underlying is going to provide much better optionality for them, that they're going to be able to hold the underlying, they're going to have that geographically distributed, they're not going to have a whole host of risks in, you know, the custody options that are presented there. They can have geographical and jurisdictional arbitrage. They can have effectively their Bitcoin everywhere and nowhere at the same time. One thing that I probably talk about till I'm blue in the face that people get sick of hearing about. But you know, obviously one of the most important use cases I see moving forward is Bitcoin as collateral. And I think Bitcoin is the most important collateral moving forward on Earth. It's the best form of collateral I've ever seen. It's the first globally ubiquitous capital. And if I just talk to that point for 1 minute, when we've got globally ubiquitous capital and you're holding the underlying, you'll be able to go to any bank on Earth and get the best interest rates at the best terms from the jurisdiction that is the most supportive of this asset. Now, if they're holding it through an ETF, that's not possible. You've got to be satisfied with whatever the margin lending rates are with your service provider on the ETF that they have. And to give you the example here, a very real example of what this means, is if you're holding the underlying, you'll be able to take your Bitcoin to a Japanese bank, which is charging a 1% interest rate on borrowing on Bitcoin, and you'll be able to have a loan for 1%. Versus if you have your Bitcoin stuck in a US ETF by BlackRock, Fidelity, whoever it might be, you're going to be looking at a margin lending facility that's going to be charging you 7 to 8% to borrow on that. And you won't be able to take your ETF to Japan to borrow in the Japanese market. So all of a sudden, you're limiting your options dramatically by not having the underlying. And this is where sophisticated investors will understand that that's a very real problem that they want to solve in the future. And the other unique thing about that is you won't be stuck with any forex exposure that you would otherwise have with any other asset. And that's because Bitcoin's the only asset other than gold and the US dollar that's denominated in every currency pair.
Absolutely. This concept of Bitcoin is the world's best collateral, pristine collateral. We've seen obviously gold is this base layer reserve asset, but it's very, very difficult to post as collateral because you got to lug the bars around. US Treasuries, we've seen with the continued issuance of US Treasuries and the increase in the rate of issuance, people are still borrowing them globally. I mean, demand really is ex still extremely strong. It frankly has never been higher because of how many are being issued and that it's not really disrupting the US Treasury market. There's still a marginal buyer. But at the end of the day, Bitcoin, given its monetary properties, is that pristine collateral. So I do absolutely agree with you that it really is a game changer for global lending. It's going to drive people out of Bitcoin-esque and Bitcoin-adjacent and Bitcoin tracking vehicles like these spot ETFs. They're going to want to own the physical thing. Because it's going to mean that they can take that and borrow against it instead of having to sell it. The Michael Saylor model. People do not want to have to sell their Bitcoin into cash in order to pay for things. And with global creditors being able to go out and lend to people using widely accepted Bitcoin as collateral, it really is going to be a game changer in Bitcoin's monetization. I absolutely agree. One question about the education piece as well. Wall Street, obviously a great set of salespeople. We now have major countries, the United States chief among them, the leading political candidate here in the US, who may not know everything about Bitcoin, but he's openly saying that he wants to make the United States the Bitcoin center of the world. He wants to foster the most competitive global environment. So, does it seem, I mean, it seems to me like now the world's leaders are also Bitcoin salespeople. It seems like they're not working against us anymore. They're working for us, or at least they're starting to. What are your thoughts on that?
It makes me laugh when you say that because one of the great posts that were tweeted out in the last 12 months was a photo of Larry Fink, billionaire in his own right, head of one of the most, I guess, important financial institutions on earth. And some pleb posted, he works for me now, meaning he works for Bitcoin. And I look at that and sort of juxtapose that with Trump, who's now the leading candidate or one of the two candidates in the US election, and think there's a very real need for everyone to get on board with this. And this is, I guess, the problem that we have is that most people don't think they need it, but everyone's going to need it at some point. You can either be early to it when you don't need it, which is far easier than if you do need it. And having some of the most powerful people on earth now advocates for Bitcoin is such a diametric change to where we were 12 months ago. 12 months ago, Larry Fink wasn't in the game, Trump wasn't in the game, RFK Jr. wasn't in the game. And now all of a sudden, we've got like very influential, powerful people on a nation state level advocating for Bitcoin. I just can't help but look at this and think in the next 5 years, we'll have a central bank of one of these countries buying Bitcoin and having that as a foreign reserve asset.
Absolutely. It seems very much like we're on the precipice of that. You already have a nation like El Salvador that's buying something like 25 a day or something like that. They've been doing that for years now. You have Trump, if he does get elected, vowing to establish a strategic Bitcoin reserve, and then it's game on. And then countries are actively allocating, and the people who run the money printer, which Bitcoin was invented partly as or in large part as a hedge against. Now they can use that very same money printer to allocate to Bitcoin, right? And so the people who are holding it now are uniquely positioned to not have to compete against the United States and buy it. They're not going to have to compete against the money printer itself to buy it. And so it's kind of this ironic twist of fate that now 15 years on from the creation of this asset, and just over 14 years, 13 and a half years from it actually having a market price, the very reason it was invented, now those same people are actively bidding it up. It's remarkable. It really is. We're accelerating. I think that's the best way to put it. We really are accelerating in this asset's adoption and its maturation.
Yeah, it just is such a departure from where we were that all of a sudden we've now gone full circle that it was a matter of finding the system. And now I think there'll be an adoption by the system of Bitcoin, and there'll be some quite symbiotic relationship between the US dollar and Bitcoin. And I actually think Bitcoin's going to be responsible for dollarizing the world. You know, to the people who think that BRICS is going to take over and oh, the SWIFT system's dead, I think the SWIFT system will just be reborn as something probably the Tether Bitcoin system, where there's a US dollar or euro dollar equivalent that will spread globally, because you need some form of stability in the price. So you've got to pair that with a US dollar, and you know, everyone will, you know, even us in Australia will be working with a US dollar, which will be odd, but that'll bring in hyper Bitcoinization and on the way to, you know, 100% complete adoption of Bitcoin.
Of course. And you know, this is, I'm happy you brought this up, because this is a point that a lot of people, particularly Bitcoiners, will miss, or they'll look over. They think that the Bitcoin and the US dollar are fundamentally competitors, but at the end of the day, the dollar being used more widely, that's only good for Bitcoin. The United States really lucked out in 1945, 46, with the Bretton Woods Agreement, just before the last 80 years worth of industrialization and industrial development and globalization kicked off. The dollar entrenched itself as a currency underneath all that. It's not something you can necessarily unplug. And so, you know, as Tether becomes more widely adopted, you know, and utilized, I like your point about kind of like this euro dollar-esque system, this offshore banking system where, you know, instead of euro dollars, it's you know, Tether dollars or something like that. It's Tether BTC, whatever. And you know, Bitcoin and the dollar both. Kind of as the dollar will get more widely utilized as Bitcoin does too. And kind of they're going to be mutually beneficial to one another rather than necessarily competitors, I think.
I agree. And this is where, in traditional finance, this is where Bitcoin completely breaks the norm from a financial perspective, that in traditional finance, it's a zero-sum game. If I'm winning, you're losing. And if you're losing, I'm winning. Like, it's just a, you know, it's just a zero-sum game. Bitcoin paired with the US dollar has the ability to be basically an everyone wins game, that we don't have to have the zero-sum game that we've had, that we can all benefit from it, and all it doesn't need to be a mutually exclusive arrangement where it's a zero-sum game. You can have the ability to have or be mutually beneficial for all parties who are using it, whether it's the Bitcoin, the US dollar, or what have you. And this is where that's a complete dynamic change from where we are in traditional Wall Street terms, that I think will be a big movement forward, that over the next sort of 10 to 15 years, we'll see that Bitcoin actually helps build out much stabler systems, which is ironic because the volatility with Bitcoin scares people and thinks that, you know, it creates instability in systems and the rest of it, but the volatility actually brings stability. And this is where, when you pair it with the US dollar, it'll be of great benefit, I think, to society as a whole.
Agreed, agreed. You know, that volatility goes away with time, with the monetization of Bitcoin as an asset, which comes with more adoption, right? And so it only benefits us that you know, the US dollar is so firmly entrenched, it's so global and so liquid. You know, these on-ramps are readily used, and you know, as a dollar, you know, as global you know, the global economy continues to churn and grow, and the dollar becomes even more widely used on an absolute basis. Then so too does the pool of capital that can then jump into Bitcoin. And as a savings vehicle, really over time, Bitcoin has proven to be the best savings vehicle, right? For people, particularly in US dollar capital markets, where it's so easy to on-ramp, into BTC. So I love it. I do think the two are, absolutely beneficial. It's a positive sum game, right? Rather than a zero sum game. You know, I want to shift gears here back to the, kind of the Bitcoin self-custody component of things. You were obviously around. I was certainly not involved in Bitcoin years ago. You've seen a few cycles at this point. What is the reception of Bitcoin like today compared to, say, cycles prior, right? Whether it's the 2021 cycle, or 2017. You've been on the ground, you've been interacting with people, you know, advising them, now with the Bitcoin advisor, directly advising them, helping onboard them to Bitcoin and get that Bitcoin off exchanges. So, how has the perception changed for you in your direct interactions with people about Bitcoin?
I think there's been a complete shift on an awareness around it to start with, but more importantly, a curiosity, which, is part of that education piece that gets people down that road of understanding it and then investing in it. When we first started talking about Bitcoin, we used that as a hedge of the portfolio. It was discussed as a 1% to 2% allocation that could have a catastrophic failure rate to it, that it could go to zero. So we didn't want to put more than 1% to 2% of the portfolio assets in there. Now, after the last 8 years staring at this problem, Larry Fink coming to market, presidential candidates talking about it, now you can have an allocation, like a serious conversation about having an allocation of over 50% of your portfolio to Bitcoin. This isn't, you know, mums and dads I'm talking about. This is seriously wealthy families having an allocation of over 50%. Now, very few families will do that. But if you look at, in historical context, one of the greatest value investors of all time, and two people who I admire greatly in this space are Bill Miller III and Bill Miller IV, father and son. You know, one of the greatest value investors in Bill Miller III talked about in, you know, investing terms as being as good, if not better, in many respects than Warren Buffett, who is arguably the greatest investor of all time. And, you know, he talks of having two assets in his portfolio, one of which being Bitcoin at a 50% weighting. And I look at that and I think, if he's one of the greatest investors of all time and has the conviction to put 50% of his assets into that, what's stopping other families from doing that? And I think, back to that education piece, it's clearly a lack of awareness or understanding. So it's just a very different conversation today, that now this isn't, it's not a fringe asset, it's not a trinket, it's not a toy, it's not a collectible or a hobby type digital asset. This is a real world asset with real world implications that has the backing of some of the most powerful people on earth. And I look at that and think, despite all of that, there's still very little adoption, and it's such a relatively minute market capitalization relative to other assets. And I look at that from an opportunistic perspective and think, if people understood what's in front of Bitcoin as opposed to what's been, a lot of people get caught up on the fact that it's gone from 1 cent or less than a cent to $60,000. But there's more upside on a risk-adjusted basis in front of us than behind us. And that's where a lot of investors really get stuck. They think that this asset can't be $1 million or $10 million or $100 million. And this is where they just haven't done the work yet. Once they do, they'll realize that, you know, to quote a great Bitcoiner, Michael Saylor, it's basically going up forever.
Going on forever, right? You know, with an asset whose, or with a denominator whose downside is unlimited in terms of its purchasing power and its dilution, then you have a numerator, you have an asset whose upside is also unlimited too. And that's something that it takes a while for people to wrap their head around. But once they understand the magnitude of what we're facing, like the end game of global fiat currency, then the value proposition of Bitcoin makes all the more sense. You know, bringing it back to, you know, talking about families investing in Bitcoin, we talked about inheritance planning, you know, people, Bill Miller obviously investing 50% of his portfolio in Bitcoin. You know, have you seen an increase in some of those more high conviction, you know, high net worth families who are not just coming to you with for their own personal stack, but coming into you and saying, hey, I want to give this to my children. I want to give this to my, you know, grandchildren. I want to make sure that this is here. Have those conversations increased in frequency, where people are not only coming to you for inheritance planning, but they're also increasing the quantity of their portfolio that's allocated to Bitcoin?
I think there are two schools of thought on this. I think there's a discussion around it that people are far more tolerant and accepting and curious about Bitcoin. And an example of this was, I was at, went to a nice restaurant yesterday for lunch, caught up with a dear friend of mine, and her father happened to be sitting at the other table with a bunch of his mates, some, you know, very well-to-do, shrewd investors, and they invited me over to talk Bitcoin. And the conversation was, hey, let's talk about this, let's talk about that, you know, what is it, how is it, it's this digital scarcity thing, how can that actually be a real thing, are there really only 21 million? And then we had the conversation about the, you know, the infinite pizza. There's a genuine curiosity there. And it's funny, talking to a table of 80-year-olds, I said, look, in the next 10 years, I think it's going to go up 150x. And one of the men at the table happened to be around 8 years ago when I told him to buy it. But sadly, he didn't. And there was, he said, what price was it when you said to buy it? I said, oh, it's $600. And he said, what's the price now? It's like 60,000. And one of the gentlemen at the table just looked over at their friend as if to say, you just absolutely blew it. And I said, oh, well, don't worry, I think there's 150x in the next 10 years as well. And one of the guys piped up and said, we're all over 80 here, we're going to be dead in 10 years. I had a good laugh at that, but I was like, well, you've got children, and you want to make sure that they're looked after. And, my outlook for the next, call it, 18 months to 2 years is somewhere between a 3 to a 10x return. And even if we have an economic meltdown, I think we're going to get close to those numbers. I said, you're no longer investing for yourselves anymore. It's really about, for your kids. Once you've, made that rationalization in your head, then from a lot of our older clients, a lot of them look at, well, what's the best investment that they could make for their children to ensure that, their level of wealth gets passed on and carried forward, that their children and grandchildren are looked after. And so how we've approached this from a family office perspective is we've looked at what bucket does Bitcoin sit in, and it's typically an alternative asset. Personally, I have it in its own asset class now, but for the last 8 years or so, we had a weighting of close to 25% for alternative assets. And if I look at Bitcoin as being the best alternative asset I've ever seen, we could have quite comfortably a 50% weighting to Bitcoin. And I look at that and I think, regardless of what level of wealth you're at, if you look at those investing principles and portfolio allocation, you could quite comfortably get a 12 to 15% allocation of total assets to Bitcoin. Now, personally, I'd like to see a lot more, but it's very difficult to talk someone into this digital asset that they believe is a fugazi or fairy dust. So we just got to work really slowly and provide a lot of education and resources around getting comfortable with that investment.
100%. Yeah, as this asset grows and matures, people are more comfortable with putting higher percentages of their portfolio into it. And we really are more than ever reaching brand new kinds of investors, those who are really on the fence, people like, the gentleman you were just talking about, who has a great deal of money, has invested his whole life, and now he realizes, wow, this is something I should have gotten into. But I think that, rather than saying, oh, geez, I missed out, understanding that Bitcoin is still well on its journey to overtaking gold, well on its journey to overtaking the value of the US stock market, real estate, subsuming all of those in US dollar terms. So with Theia, we just released, and we mentioned it earlier as well, a buy Bitcoin feature within the app. So now not only, can you create the most robust security setup for your Bitcoin in a manner that's easier than just a single hardware wallet set up on your own. But you can also stack Bitcoin from directly inside the app. And we're coming out with brand new features every day that make that even easier. Right now, we have ACH payments. We're going to enable wire transfers for larger purchases. Eventually, we're going to enable credit cards and debit cards. And so, really, from the TBA side of things, we are absolutely ecstatic that now we've given you a solution that really streamlines the entire process for you, makes it easier than ever. And we feel that it's at the perfect time, not only because now we have this buy Bitcoin functionality too, but also because we really, in my view, are set to kick off the meat of this bull run. We've been chopping around, we've been consolidating for ages, and not just this cycle, but for cycles after. And so, we feel that at Theia, we're uniquely positioned to help bring a lot of people, onto this big orange life raft that we know is Bitcoin. And frankly, we couldn't be more excited to be building this thing day in, day out, and we're so happy to have found great partners such as yourself that also see the tremendous value in this, but also share that ethos of wanting to onboard as many people as we can, want to get all of our friends, family, loved ones onto this thing, not just prepare themselves for what's to come, but to set their children up and their grandchildren up for that upside as well.
Yeah, it really is a communal effort, and what you've built there at Theia is genuinely impressive. And I urge anyone to who's watching this to download the app, have a look at it, play with it, get it set up in a matter of minutes. It's literally idiot-proof if you have trouble doing it and can't get it to work for whatever reason. Literally, just book a meeting with me. I'll walk you through it. I'm that confident you'll be able to do it. I don't think I'll have any bookings on it. It truly is a communal effort to ensure that this once-in-a-lifetime asset is secured properly for future generations to ensure and take advantage of. And this is where I'm so impressed with the work that Thea's done in making that user experience 10x better. So for me, it's a no-brainer for us to partner with Thea, and absolutely thrilled that we get to partner with a great team in yourself, Smeet, and the rest of the crew. So really appreciate it.
Of course, and couldn't have said it better myself, honest to goodness. You know, if you are having trouble within Theia, that is a extremely unique situation. But if you do, you can go to theia.us, book a free consultation with us. Or if you're on the fence and interested, have some questions, book a free consultation with us there on the homepage at theia.us. And just as Peter said, go over to the fine folks at the Bitcoin Advisor. You can find Peter on Twitter, or X rather, at PeterBTCAdvisor. And you could obviously go to the BitcoinAdvisor.com, spelled with it, to go check them out. If you are a higher net worth individual, if you want help with inheritance planning, you want help getting a multi-sig vault set up, probably within Theia is what you'll want to do, given how simple it is, you can go to them as well. Peter, any final parting words before we leave viewers here?
You know what? I would be curious and try it. There's nothing to lose. You can play around with it. It's a great user experience. It will no doubt improve your self-custody setup dramatically. And on a side note, I've got to duck off in just a minute to jump on a call with a client to go through this process and get them set up. And if we're lucky, it'll take 5 minutes. And if we're really unlucky, it'll take 15. So I urge you to try it all yourself and see what it is, give feedback. And this is this is just a iteration game that we're just trying to make things better and inch by inch make a better user experience and a better world for having coins off exchange and in self-custody. So thanks for the time.
Yeah, I appreciate the kind words, Peter.
Thank you. And you heard Peter. Go check out Theia, spelled Theia, the same way you see it spelled up in that corner of the screen, as well as on the account that uploaded this video. Go check it out on the App Store, Android version coming soon. Play around with it. Let us know what you think. And Peter, once again, thanks so much for coming on. We'll chat soon.
Pleasure. Thanks, Jeff.